Blog Talk Radio.
Talk about the Eagle experience, but he's an HBCU. nonetheless, even though he didn't go to Livingstone, we'll forgive him for that. But he still is an HBCU. He's a in the family of HBCUs. I tell you, Leon, my experience was, you know, when I think about the conversation about HBCUs versus going to some of the non-HBCUs, I think it goes back, we have to weigh a lot of factors. And because I always ask myself, who measures excellence? How is it measured on whether one school is better than the next? And when you look at who makes the rules on what's good, what's bad, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, it keeps dating back to the power structure and how this country has been established and set up. And we're led to believe somehow that our schools are not as good, they're not, they don't, you know, pass the muster, or they're somehow inferior. That's just part of that cultural conditioning. It also asks, it begs the question, who establishes our priorities? What's important to us? Usually it's not us that makes those kind of decisions. So I think we have to reexamine that whole priority setting, who sets the rules. The I think it was Mao Zedong, or somebody said, he who has the power makes the rules, determine who's right and wrong. So, and that right. applies to HBCUs, practically every facet of our culture of this country, and HBCUs are no different. So it's no surprise that people like Kamala Harris and other well-known people, Puff Daddy and all these other guys, they went to HBCUs because the schools are putting out quality graduates that are going out doing great things. And we just look down the list, Thurgood Marshall and so forth. The history is replete with people who have graduated from HBCUs who have done exceptionally well, make great contributions to the society. And so anybody who marginalizes or somehow discounts the value and their contributions, they're being dishonest. Anyway, that's my two cents.
Yeah. That's just a little side note. Now, Joseph, you're coming up. But just a little side note here. These numbers include HBCUs ever since they were in existence, where it says here that 65% of all black physicians, 50% of all black engineers, and 35% of all black lawyers have graduated from an HBCU. Now, like I said, those numbers date back from the existence of HBCUs. Of course, those, if you move to present day, you'll see some different kind of data coming forward, statistics, because, you know, that was, because this includes before they allow black folks to go to white colleges. That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, so, of course, now we're going to other colleges and stuff like that, and you know what happens. So, anyway, but the numbers are still looking good for HBCUs as far as when it comes to the production of black physicians, engineers, and lawyers. Joseph went to North Carolina Central University, where there's the powerful and prestigious North Carolina Central University Law School. Joseph, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, Leon. Hey, Robert.
Hey, bro.
You sound a little distant, Joseph. Joseph, you always sound
a little
distant,
little
man.
I am a little.
I know you're in Charlotte, man, but like Robert's in D.C., I can hear him I can hear him better.
Hey, man, we're not using
a
string. We're not using a string in a can, so distance shouldn't matter.
So, do you hear me, though?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you a little bit, man. We hear you, bro.
You can hear me.
But you know you got ego pride amplified, so we wanted to hear you amplified a little better.
I got you. But at any rate, yes, I am a graduate. I'm a graduate of North Carolina Central University, and like Leon said, we have a law school there. And of course, a few years back, North Carolina Central was voted the number one law school in the country for women. And of course, North Carolina Central University has the biomedical technology school, which there are only two in the state of North Carolina. The other one is at NC State up in Raleigh. And also, North Carolina Central, right now as we speak, we're starting up an aerospace program at North Carolina Central University.
Jeez.
So, having said that, it's kind of piggyback off what Robert was saying about, you know, all the opportunities that are available at HBCUs, and of course, and you know, I'm proud of the accomplishments that just the members of my family have made coming out of HBCUs. But Leon was reading off some numbers a while ago about the impact HBCUs are having on the nation, particularly as it refers to black professionals. And this is an article that recently came out. It said that despite constituting only 3% of all four-year colleges in the country, HBCUs are only 3% of all the colleges in the country. Yet HBCUs have produced 80% of the black judges, and of course without even knowing this statistic, I was having a conversation with some people. I said just about every black judge that I know in Charlotte graduated from North Carolina Central University Law School, and also HBCUs. Now keep in mind we only make up what 3% of all the colleges in the nation. 97% of all the rest of the colleges in the nation are, you know, what they call predominantly white colleges. But the HBCUs have produced 50% of the black judges. Produced 80% of the black judges, 50% of the black lawyers, 50% of the black doctors. 50% of the black doctors in the United States graduated from HBCUs. It would be a time for my phone to kind of act up. 50% of the black doctors, 40% of the 40% of the black engineers came out of HBCUs. Check this out. 40% of the members. Of the black members in Congress. We only make up 3% of the colleges now, but we have 40% of the black members in college came out of HBCUs, and 13% of black CEOs in the country all came out of HBCUs. And I'm going to throw a little statistic. In there that's not even on here, because, you know, people always have a tendency to overlooked insurance agents, but just about 100% of all the independent insurance agents in Charlotte that own their own business came out of HBCUs.
That's like all of them.
There
are a few more out there, but what I'm saying is, you know, just like the point we are making. You know, if anybody want to argue about the product HBCU produces, just look at the statistics. And also, I always remind people that when I came out of North Carolina Central University in 1976, my first job, I had 5 Carolina grads working under me and 2 East Carolina grads. So...
No.
And of course, and it wasn't because they liked me. So having
that's quite an accomplishment.
Pardon me?
That's quite a story, man. That's quite an accomplishment. It's a story.
So,
over and over.
And anytime somebody want to talk about an HBCU, I give them that little bit of my personal experience and my personal background coming from an HBCU.
That's quite a story to tell. So how did you end up at North Carolina Central University, Joseph? I mean, I'm just asking that because all the rest of us went to Livingstone. What happened? How did you get over there? What happened?
Well, actually, I ended up at North Carolina Central University because of North Carolina Central University had a law school, and at the time I wanted to be a lawyer, and of course, and there were only, and I was determined that I was going to go to an HBCU, even though there was some at Bowman High School where specifically my geometry teacher, he was trying to recruit me to go to Carolina, because you know how they always do, they want to get the best students and try to direct them towards the, you know, predominantly white schools. And that way, you know, they can say, hey, look how great a job he did. He came out of Carolina or whatever the case may be. But anyway, but I was determined I was not going to Carolina. I was determined I was going to an HBCU. And I wanted to go to law school, and there were only four black law schools in the country at that time. Right? Matter of fact, there are only three now. But then there were four. It was North Carolina Central, Howard University, Southern University in Texas, and Southern University in Baton Rouge. Those are four black, you know, those are four black law schools in the country at that time. And of course, and I didn't apply at Howard, but I did get information about Howard because I knew that's where Thurgood Marshall had gone to school. And so, long story short, Howard University was too high. And I looked at in-state, North Carolina Central was much, cost a whole lot less, and so I ended up going to North Carolina Central with the intention of becoming a lawyer. But, you know, circumstances changed, and I just got my BA degree and came on out.
I feel you, bro. Yeah, it was kind of like me going to Livingstone to be a doctor, Joseph. I just got my BS degree in biology and booked up out of there, bro. Let me get on out of here while I can, you know, that kind of thing. Before they start, keeping people that aren't doing well. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That's cool stuff. Robert, you know, I think you went to Livingstone on a, what, was it music scholarship? Did Robert disappear?
Robert,
I didn't block that. Robert.
Hey,
I'm sorry, it seemed like you were blocked out there, man. You say you were living stone on a music scholarship.
Yeah, I had a circuitous journey as well. I hadn't really decided to be a lawyer when I went to Livingstone. I was going to go to AT&T is the school. I get them mixed up with the phone company. AT&T. I was going to AT&T to be an
AT&T.
AT&T
is the school, man.
Okay,
you got to mix it up, bro. Don't do that.
I was going to go to AT&T to be an engineer.
Right.
I had been told by the counselors at Bowman High School that I had a very strong propensity and, you know, skill in math. And somebody told me I should consider engineering. So I had applied to A&T and had sent them my little $50 and everything. And one day in the – can you still hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, do you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, so I was going to go to A&T to become an engineer, and one day I was at in one of the study halls or something at Bowman High School, and the recruiters from Livingstone came to the campus, and they were looking for people to put into their band. They were building this phenomenal music program at Livingstone, and of course I went to the they were taking auditions. I mean, they were taking on the spot auditions. Look, you still got to apply and go through all that stuff, but if you come up here and take this audition, there's a chance we can get you a scholarship. So I'm trying to get out of this classroom, really. I was like, anything to get out of here. I would audition to junk, you know, to a sewage digger at that point. So I went up there and did the audition. The guy put the music in front of me. I played it just like I do. And the guys looked at each other like, this guy can play. They went back in the corner and said, look, we don't normally do this, but we're going to make you an offer on the spot. We want you to come to Livingstone on a full music scholarship.
Wow.
Can you do it? Can you do it like that? The guy said, yeah.
You know, full scholarship?
Full 4-year scholarship.
Mm.
I said, well, engineering, I have to come back and be an engineer another day. But right now I'm going to take this free ride. And that's what happened. The guys, and so I went to Livingstone on a music scholarship. And when I got there, I realized after I did a little digging that the scholarship did not limit me to being a music major, because that's what they told me at first when I got the scholarship. I had to major in music.
And I was like, well, okay, I don't mind being a music major, but I can see, because this is how counselors don't really do their job. I'm thinking a music major, the only opportunity as a music major could be you were going to be a band director. I mean, I didn't really have the backdrop on what all the possibilities of majoring in music could be. Oh, I may have stuck with it. But I decided after being there a year or two, I said, shoot, I want to be a lawyer too. So I switched my major in my sophomore year to political science. And I guess Joseph probably had some influence on me too, because, you know, big brothers, you kind of, you're not necessarily following their exact footsteps, but they do influence. And I said, I think that law thing sounds pretty good. So I switched my major to political science. I played in the band most of my matriculation at Livingstone, but in my senior year, I switched it to pre-law. So they started a new program that people who were majoring in political science who were interested in going to law school could switch their major, and it'll be almost like a double major, political science / pre-law. And so I did that my senior year, and I was accepted to Syracuse Law School, but I was also recruited pretty heavily by Corporate America. But I'm saying all this not to toot my horn, but to tell you that the HBCU, everything I did was through the HBCU. So the acceptance at Syracuse Law School, the offers from the state government, and ultimately being recruited by Grand Union Supermarkets out of Elmwood Park, New Jersey, their corporate headquarters. They had an opening in Washington, D.C. they wanted to put me in. And so I accepted the Corporate America job. And, of course, it was a tough decision, but regardless whether I had taken the law school offer or the government offer or the one that I ultimately took, accepted, it all started at the HBCU Livingstone College. One thing they tell you, one thing I've always noticed, that math is math, law is law, medicine is medicine. They don't give us easier tests. They don't make life easier for us. But the difference is that we have people who care. And sometimes people take that, they misinterpret that as some form of weakness or some form of being soft. And nothing could be further from the truth. Humanity. That's something we got from HBCUs, a sense of humanity that's missing from many of the other institutions. And I'm not painting with a broad brush, but I'm saying I do remember those teachers. I remember the care. I remember when my brother Aaron passed away, and how the Miss Latham, Miss Maddie Lakin, and how she was almost in tears when I came. Oh yeah, she was almost in tears when I came back to school. I mean, she was caught. She wrote me a letter, and I mean, it's just something unique that touched me the rest of my time at school. I was just a freshman, but that set the tone for HBCU the rest of my matriculation at Livingstone, that I had teachers who were that involved, that immersed and embedded in my well-being, that they would actually call me and write me to check on me during my period of grief. And I'm not saying that wouldn't have happened somewhere else, but it did happen at Livingstone, my HBCU.
And Robert,
I can say this, Robert. It probably wouldn't have happened somewhere else.
Well, let me say, Carl, you know, I was in college too when Aaron died. And, you know, a lot of people always ask me about why am I so in love with NCCU, and why every time you see me, I got on maroon and gray, got a NCCU Eagle tag, NCCU all over my office. See, I was in college.
Right.
I was in college also when Aaron died. And
mm-hmm.
And when Aaron died, I mean, I just went into a complete depression for about a month.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, I had even just quit going to school. I had quit going to school. It was a real tough period. And I had quit going to school, and I was just laying up in my room one day, because I was living off campus, and I said to myself, Aaron wouldn't want this, and so I just got up and decided I was going to go back to school. And I went around to all of my professors And I and just like a script, they all gave me the same answer. And because you know I had stopped going to class, they hadn't seen me, and I just walked up in there and said, "What do I need to do to pass this class?" And everyone looked at me. I guess they could see the grief on my face. They knew there was something going on, but they didn't even ask me. All of them told me the same thing. They said, pass the final, you'll pass the class.
Wow.
They didn't send them about no makeup work or nothing. They said, pass the final, you'll pass the class. Every one of them.
See, then, of course, I had that family, boy.
I mean, I had the guy in the political science department working with me, the dean of students. It was just like, it was just amazing. It was just amazing. And I tell my wife all the time, I said, I probably would have graduated from somewhere like Livingstone, you know, if I had gone to Livingstone, because I feel like, you know, because, you know, all y'all went down, you know, the same type of family environment. I said, but I knew I had gone to Carolina. I said, there's no way under the sun I would have gotten a college degree. No way possible.
Yeah.
No way possible.
That's and it's hard to place a value. It's kind of hard to place a value on that. And that's why when I go back and say, when I started out by saying, who establishes our priorities and what's important to us? And
right.
How do we measure excellence? We have to look at, we can't always follow what other people do. And because culture, if you discount culture and history, and sometimes you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. And that's another place where HBCUs shine, because they are aware of the history and the culture. And they know that we have had a different upbringing. We've had to endure different challenges.
Right.
And it's kind of hard to explain that to somebody who does not understand your culture.
That's
not asking for a shortcut or something free. I don't want anything free from anybody.
Right.
That's not what our daddy taught us. He didn't teach us that.
That's right.
So,
ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. The guest number to call in is 215-383-3872. We're talking about HBCU. We're challenging you to call in and rep your HBCU tonight. We have a caller on the line. Would you like to talk, caller? We got one on the line. They scared. There's one on here. It's a call on this line. What's up, bro? How you doing?
This is Tim Ellopin from North Carolina Central University. How's everybody doing?
Brother Tim.
We're doing good,
bro.
How you doing,
Eagle
man?
Pride amplified, man. Doing
there
well.
You go. There you go. There you go.
Praise God.
That's why we're trying to get Joe to speak up a while ago, because we knew he had that amplified Eagle Pride.
Absolutely.
Hey, Tim,
you know,
tell us your story, man. How did you end up in North Carolina Central, man?
Well, I tell you, I say this through the grace of God, I was accepted at High Point College, and I was accepted at High Point College, one of the colleges I was accepted, and one of my friends, who's that? I'm trying to think of, applied for it, and she said, I just went up there, you know what I mean? I mean, just went up there, and when I stepped on the campus, I just found the feeling. Just the nature of it. I mean, just the nature of it. Now, it was just felt good, you know, to be able to see African Americans and the people coming up to you and engaging you and things of that nature. And of course, the grace of God, I had dad and mom with me and things of that nature. And of course, my father, you know, he'd say, you know, he liked this. Well, he went to dad went to John C. Smith, and mother went to Winston-Salem State. So, so they felt the connection there. He said, you know, Tim, I like this and things of that nature. And so that's kind of how it went, you know. And I must also tell you that it was one of the best decisions that I made, you know, as far as my life is concerned. Now, I must tell you that it built a level of of resilience and determination. Because delivering kid in the hole was something else to be, you know, to really to get accustomed to. But it really helped your strength and everything, because, you know, it just taught you a whole lot. And then what you initially went through, your things that you learned, but it just built you up. You know, if I can get through this, and I know I can get out here in this world and all, and then be able to survive. But it just taught you the foundation of how to achieve, you know, as an African American, and then just diversity nature of it all, you know, what you got a chance to see. But, you know, I was in business administration and all that nature, and it just, you know, taught you some things, what you have to prepare for, you know, what you need to be doing. And, you know, that once you graduated, to walk across that stage, be able to go out here and find your job and start your career and everything. So it was a great experience. And I'm just so blessed to see my college. I mean, if you go up on North Carolina Central right about now, you say, my goodness, the diversity.
Exactly.
See what is transpired and all like that, and what our HBCUs are going through. But I challenge young people. Anytime I get a chance to talk to them, I really, you know, really impress upon parents to please get that exposure there, you know, because it really teaches you a foundation of your history and your legacy and what a child needs to be doing to be very successful. Whatever your passion is, whatever you desire to do, you get that exposure there, you know. And
absolutely.
It teaches you how to be very open to this world that we live in, because we know what this world is all about out here, you know what I mean? It's tough for us.
Oh,
it
yeah.
remains to be a tough for us to be able to be successful and to get jobs and retain things of that nature. So, but it just teaches you, builds you that foundation of resiliency and strength. I know I'm talking a whole lot here. I'm sorry, but I'm just committed to our HBCU okay. survival and our children being exposed to this, so parents can see what's what. You know.
Absolutely, man. I tell you, that's kind of the experience. Right quick, I hear that we're getting ready to take a break. But right quick, what I liked about Livingstone when I got there, it was like the people. It was like the students
yes.
and the instructors and the dorm mothers. Everybody was like, it was like a family. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I know that sounds a little cliche, but it's the truth. And, you know, they met the guys like George McCain, Harold Rowan, and then all those guys, mm-hmm. and Bruce Stanback. See, those guys just kind of like, you know, because I was from the country. I was from Waynesboro.
Yeah.
I hadn't had a lot of exposure.
Right.
And everybody kind of picked up on that. And they just kind of took me under their wings and started mm-hmm. showing me stuff. Like, man, they laughed at me. You know, they picked at me now. Don't get me wrong. But it was fun, you know. And Miss Mike, the dorm mother. If I didn't show back up for class after the break, she called the house. Where is he at? Where that boy at? That kind of stuff
yes.
like that, you know. That stuff you don't get. That person, you know,
right.
that personal touch
right.
you don't get at those large institutions.
And
but ladies and gentlemen, listen
yeah.
to the Brother For Real Radio Show. The number to call in is 215-383-3872. We are expecting Mr. Gerald Balcom with Campus Connections to come on the line later on in the show. What he does is he has a program where he takes young high school students, normally the grades 10 through 12, on HBCU campus tours throughout up and down the East Coast. I mean, it's a remarkable program. Not only does the program do that aspect, but it also has a program where it trains young people on how to take the SATs, take the SAT tests and stuff of that nature. Has a good record of improving SAT scores, and we are looking very forward to him coming on the show later on. But right now we're going to take a quick break. Brothers For Real Radio Show, call 215-383-3872 and rep your HBCU. Got Tim Ellaby on the line from North Carolina Central University. All right. Let's take a break, Robert. HBCU experience there, ain't it?
Yes, sir. Hey, you know what, Leon? When I was in the band, I was in the Livingstone March at 100, and that was one of the songs we used to play. Man, we'd go up the field. That's 100 band members stretched across that entire field. Man, that was a sight to behold. That was something.
Oh, yes. Man, that was a pride. That was a proud moment. That's a proud moment.
Yes. I was in the band also when I was at North Carolina Central. Played the saxophone. Went up to Philadelphia. We did the halftime show for the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Redskins.
What?
And, yes, sir. We came up the field.
What y'all do that for? Why y'all do
they
that?
Invited us.
I didn't know you all had done that. I didn't know you all had done that because we were Livingstone came up to play for Washington in my senior year. We came up there and tore that place up.
Did y'all go to Washington? Did y'all go to Philadelphia?
We came to Washington. We came to Washington, played at one of the games in D.C.
Well,
but,
we went to Philadelphia.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. The powers, whoever made that decision, saw the skill and the talent, and recognized it by inviting the school up there. So that was great.
Yeah, we went to Philadelphia Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles invited us. Of course, I was thinking maybe because we were the North Carolina Central Eagles. But anyway, we came up the field playing backstabbers. Dun 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 dun, boy, you should have heard. You heard it when we hit that. Getting ready to come up that field. We came up the field doing them 8 to 5. And anybody ever know they've been in the band and know what 8 to 5 is?
Oh,
you got to do 8 to 5. Oh
on
yeah.
On that 8th step, that line, that foot better be hitting center of that line.
5 yards.
That's right. 8 steps to 5 yards, and that foot better hit right in the middle of that line on that step number 8. So,
no matter how tall or short you were.
That's right. Jim,
didn't matter.
Like
what about the short people, man?
It didn't matter. You better stretch it out.
And you hit what we call a 90. But anyway, when we hit that 50-yard line, when everybody hit the 50-yard line, they did a 360 and kept right on moving.
Absolutely. That's good. And I'd just like to thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I just want to thank you all for just putting the emphasis on HBCUs and carrying the baton forward, because 2 weeks ago, Congresswoman Alma Adams had an HBCU program at West Charlotte High School. It was well received, and what we loved about it was the fact that we saw children and their families there gathering information about our colleges, and it was just well represented. And for her to be on that stage and talking about the value of our HBCUs, and to see the momentum just picking up as we work extremely hard to keep our HBCUs moving forward and making a difference in the lives of our children. Now, also, Leon, I think I shared this with you. We're going to have an HBCU college fair at at my church, at Friendship Missionary Baptist Church, on 9/20, on the 28th of September.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm glad it hasn't happened yet, because when I saw the pictures of the event with Alma Adams, I was wondering if that was the same one. Okay,
no,
great.
Right,
make sure we got some kids up there for that. Yeah.
Yes, it's going to be on the September 28th. It's going to be from 9 to 2 o'clock. And we have right now 45 HBCUs will be there, along with representatives. It's going to be a great, engaging fair. Yeah, it's going to be very engaging. We're going to have food, of course. It's going to be where, you know, and all like that. So please pass the word. There's going to be a friendship, and I think I sent you some flyers, but I can send you some more, whatever I need to do to inform
you. You did. We've been sharing it on the Holla page as well. So,
good,
yeah.
Great. Okay.
That's
okay.
Good stuff there, man.
Yes, man, because, you know, we got to keep the momentum going, because there's so much value in what our schools can make a difference in the lives of our children and families, you know, and a support mechanism that's in place as well. You know, I think that's crucial. We push that real hard in North Carolina, attention to follow up people and things of that nature, you know, to make a difference. Absolutely.
You know what tripped me out when you said 40? Did you say 40?
45.
Yeah, 45, and then I'm thinking, well, that's a lot of it. Is that all of them? Then I realize there's like 101
mm-hmm.
HBCUs
yeah.
in the United States, in the Virgin Islands, of course. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
amazing. And good to have the schools, you know, and majority of schools in North Carolina, you know, that are going to be there and all, and some outside of, which is great. You know, we just got good response, and we've had this before, and then see the value of it and what it brings to the families and all, to get the information at one site, you know what I mean? Just truly, it makes a difference. So look forward to it. Absolutely.
Thank you, man. That's beautiful.
Yes.
That's beautiful. So you and Joe are church mates.
Yes. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Yeah, Joseph, my brother Joseph, y'all not only went to the same college, y'all go to the same church.
Same church as well, yes, sir. That's right. I think the last time I was at church, I saw him and everything. Yep. That's right. Right there together.
That's cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So, Robert, are there any HBCUs in D.C.? Help me out, man.
Well, you know,
Howard University.
Mm-hmm. Howard.
We have Bowie State University right up the street. We got Morgan State,
mm-hmm.
Maryland Eastern Shore.
Cobbin State.
Towson, that's right. Right down the street, we got Open Tidewater. We got Norfolk State. We got
Hampton.
You get that on Virginia. That's right, Hampton. We
Virginia.
Got right down the
mm-hmm.
street. Virginia Union, man, you
right.
talk about. We got a pack of them up in this area.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yes, sir. So this is like the capital of HBCUs.
Well, down here where we have J.C. Smith, Livingstone.
Yeah.
A&T.
Yes, sir.
Bennett. Barbara Scotia. You know, what's interesting is I talked to a young lady that went to Barbara Scotia. The other day, she was telling me how she remembered us, you know, because, you know, we used to run up and down 85, man. We go to Barbara Scotia, to J.C. Smith.
I was going to say, Leon, if somebody went to Barbara Scotia, they probably knew us, because that was like our little home away from home. That was right up the street. It was about 20 miles.
Yeah, I went to Paul, man.
That was fun, too. We went up there and do our little frat steps and go up there and hang out and cut the food. Yeah. HBCUs. But you know that, Leon, another thing about mm-hmm. HBCUs, there was a camaraderie between the schools. I mean, that was always the rivalry, the football, basketball, the band rivalries, but it's like if you were at one HBCU in the area, you were like almost a surrogate member, an honorary member of all of them, because it was just that kind of open arms. We would have the step shows, and guess who would come? Frats from all around the other HBCUs in the area. So that was really quite an experience. Yeah.
I'm about to clap for that.
You about to cry?
I'm about to cry, yeah.
It's good for the soul. It's good for the soul. I already cried. That's why I took a break.
Give me a tiki Tito.
You know, I talk to people that, and I don't know why. You know, like I say, I don't, you know, disregard anybody's education experience, or you know, talk against their education experience or anything, or say they have inferior education or anything. But every time I seem to talk to somebody who did not go to an HBCU, and they went, they always say, "I wish I had gone to an HBCU."
Yeah, they do.
So at what point are we going to pass this message along where people will get it? And specifically, we need to let our athletes get that message, because those boys are making a whole lot of money for Duke University and Carolina and all these big colleges. I mean, they're just making a mint off of our boys. And our boys, and after they go out there and run that football and shoot that basketball, they kick them to the curb and come out in the world and can't even function. And, of course, in the all of going to the NBA or the NBA or the NFL, I mean, it is the all of the, what, are like 1%?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Like I say, the NBA only has about 30 guys a year, you know. So, what are your chances?
Pretty bad odds.
Winning the lottery?
Pretty bad odds, right there.
And just in Division I basketball, for example, just in Division I basketball. Now, we're not talking about Division II, Division III. But in Division I basketball, you got 343 schools, basketball teams. And multiply that times 12. How many people you competing against?
Yeah, you
so
got to be the best.
What
every time I see a child walking around to me, he, I ask these boys, I say, what you want to be when you grow up? I want to get on the NBA and no a ball nowhere in sight. I said, man, you need to have a ball tied around your neck. You need to have
right.
a ball bouncing it everywhere you go. What do you say, Joseph? All day long. You
all
need to have a
day.
Basketball.
But the point is, the best players, for whatever reason, they are taking all their talents, all their skills, and letting it benefit somebody else and somebody else's community. Just like take Mike Krzyzewski, for example. This guy is making about $10 million a year. So you know if he's making $10 million a year, you can imagine what that program is making.
He's making a lot of money. You talking about the coach, Mike?
Huh?
I didn't know how to spell his name or pronounce it, but you're talking about the guy, the coach. Yeah, he's making $10 million a year coaching?
Yeah, the coach at Duke University. This guy making about
$10
million
a year coaching?
$10
million. And that's big. That's a lot, man.
And the players are making how much a year?
Bologna sandwich at every game.
Zero.
Something like that.
Well, you know, they're trying to see if they can pay the players. You know, the players can get compensated for their playing, you know, in college. I think some representative is trying to do that, trying to get that looked at to see if the players can't get compensated for, you know, their playing.
Yeah, they need to. What I'm saying, but the point is, why these players, some of these top players, at least some of the top players, should consider Livingstone or A&T or North Carolina Central University. It should at least give us a shot. But, you know, you automatically, if you're a number one recruit, you're a number one player, you automatically feel like you got to go to Carolina or you got to go to Duke or you got to go to State or go out to Indiana or somewhere. And, of course, the only thing you're doing is you're doing the same thing that happened during slavery. You're using your skills and you're using your talent to benefit somebody else. We've already done that one time in our history. That was during slavery. And it was done then involuntarily. But now it's being done. The same thing is being duplicated, but only now it's being done voluntarily. And you can't blame the boys for that. You can't blame just the boys for that. Because you got to create an atmosphere, and you got to create a culture in our homes and our community for us to respect all of our institutions, our churches, our schools, our businesses, our neighborhoods. We have to create a culture where we respect what's ours. And we can't always say just because it's somebody else's, it's better than what we have.
Well, you know how that is, man. You know how that is, though. You know, as bad as I want that to happen, it's going to take the young people doing it. It's going to take them to say, well, I'm going to Livingston, or I'm going to North Carolina Central.
Yeah.
Like you say, Joseph, it's going to take a cultural adjustment.
They take a cultural
adjustment.
Have to
change the culture of thinking in the community, and that, my brother, I can assure you, is a difficult task.
That's a difficult task, unfortunately, but somewhere along the way, we just dropped the ball. We just dropped the ball. And
it's funny. I'll tell you what's funny, though, how sad it is. How, like I say, one day people say, well, you can't come to our school. And then one day they say, you know, all of a sudden it's okay, y'all can come. And then, but before they let you come or allow you to come, they've already figured out how it's going to benefit them.
That's all right. It's like Alabama for a number. It's like Alabama, you know, Alabama University. Now, of course, they number one or number two in football every year, okay, nationally. And 90% of the players are black. And that's the same school where George Wallace stood on the front step that the administration building said a black person will never attend this university. George Wallace said, y'all ain't coming here. But then all of a sudden, a few of these schools, I recruited some black players, and they won. And all of a sudden, said, we probably can use those Negroes. And so, then next thing, they start recruiting black players. And, of course, that was the end of that's where it all started. And now all of our HBCUs are crumbling because of a lack of resources just like football is a very expensive sport, and most HBCUs that are having a football program, they're pretty much in the red. They're pretty much in the red, including North Carolina Central. A&T probably might be doing a little better than most of them right now, but for the most part, just about every HBCU that has a football team, they're in the red because we don't get the revenue, and of course, we don't sell enough season tickets, we don't get enough attendance, we don't get enough sponsorship, and the reason for that is because we cannot recruit the top players. And all the top players in the nation are African American. And then that's a sad commentary.
It's pretty sad, man. It's hard to think about. It's just hard to think about how we keep falling for the okie doke.
Yeah, we keep
falling
for everything.
I guess I said that right. Yeah.
Well, let me interject some here. The perception is that if you go to a predominantly white institution and play sports, you have a greater chance of being able to go take to the next level in the league, and that's one of the perceptions that you have there. If I go to a Carolina as opposed to North Carolina Central, I have a greater chance of maybe advancing more into professional sports and everything. And so that's kind of where it kind of get the sense of whether our better play, where our students or children are going to these schools. If they're athletes, that's kind of what you sense there. Yeah.
I'm glad you said the perception. Because keep in mind, LeBron James did not go to any college. Okay?
That's right.
He didn't go to any college. And my freshman year at North Carolina Central University, and if you don't believe me, go pull up the site and you can see it. North Carolina Central University in 1972, my freshman year, we sent more players to the NFL than any other school in North Carolina. North Carolina Central University. And you know why? Because that's before, that's when black athletes were still coming to HBCUs.
Yes.
We sent more players to the field than the field. We sent more players to the NFL, in a school in North Carolina. And I'm going to give you a little recent stat. I think it was, it might have been 2016 or 2017, a few years back. We had the highest draft pick from North Carolina. We had the high, Ryan Smith. He went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he was the highest draft pick from North Carolina. Duke, Carolina, all of them, NC State. But the highest draft pick from North Carolina came out of North Carolina Central University.
Hmm. Wow.
So.
Well. What can we do, brothers? What can we do?
Well, Leon, it all starts with what we are doing right now. We need to quit. We need to keep talking about it. We need to talk about it when we see people. We need to talk about it in our schools. We need to talk about it in our churches. Because if we don't, next thing you know, all of our HBCUs are going to be in the same situation like, can't think of the school down there, but you know what I'm talking about. A lot of them are going under. They're folding, and they're going to fold, and then everybody's going to be sitting around there talking about, well, what happened? We need our HBCUs. But what happened to them, we didn't do the things that we supposed to do to keep those schools open. We need to talk to our children. We need to go out here and recruit, just like they're doing over that Friendship, just like we're talking about right now, just like the program over there with Mr. Alma Adams. We just need to keep talking about it, just like we're doing right now. We can't take it off of our minds, not for 1 minute. You come to my office, you're going to see, first thing you see when you walk in there, you're going to see North Carolina Central University. And I can say that I have sent a lot of kids to North Carolina Central University right through my office. Matter of fact, I got y'all a button up there, Leon, because that's the only thing I could get. And I tell anybody who has a banner, one of those banners, I say if it's an HBCU, you can hang it in my office. I don't care if it's A&T, Winston-Salem State, John C. Smith. You can put it right up.
You hear that? Robert, did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Robert.
What was that?
He said he can't get nothing but a little button from Livingstone. Do you believe that?
Leon, I went to one of y'all's games, homecoming or something, and y'all were passing out these little buttons that said Livingstone Bears. And I took that little button and I hung it right up there with the banner from North Carolina Central and Bowman Senior High School.
Wow, I'm going to bring you something else.
We
got to
get
you
a little
banner. I got to go. I'm going to make a special trip to Charlotte tomorrow to take it to him.
All right, now what are you looking for?
He's not going to throw shade like that on me. Not on the line. Not on national radio. International radio.
That's what I'm saying, man. The point I was making, I said, any time I get to promote an HBCU, even if I don't have nothing but the book. You pardon me?
Yeah.
I'm going to put it out.
But you know what we got to do, gentlemen? You know the saying that goes, knowledge is power. The use of that knowledge is powerful, is how I extend that. We got to get back to the basics. When our community was struggling, we started the basics of our community was our family and our faith. We started in our churches where families are gathered. Our church community, our faith community, got to really talk around our HBCU. That should be a conversation that's a part of a monthly conversation as families are gathered within our churches, because we got to come up with some solutions on how to get the word out here consistently, because you know how it goes. Okay, hit here, but it got to be consistent so we can get our children educated and get our HBCUs saved, our HBCUs, because they have been a strong foundation for the success of our community. So we got to get it back to the basics and say, okay, churches, incorporate this into your monthly conversation around your community engagement. You know, let's have this conversation and then go for it. Yes.
And if you take a look back at all the major progress that has been made in the United States, it was led by graduates from HBCU. Dr. Martin Luther King, Morehouse University, Jesse Jackson, North Carolina A&T, Louis Farrakhan, Winston-Salem State University. And, of course, you can go on and on and on and on down Thurgood Marshall, Howard University. I mean, these are people that made tremendous accomplishments to the progress of our people in this country. And that's, you know, and the more you think about it, that might be one of the reasons HBCUs are struggling so much.
Yes.
Because they want to destroy.
That's right. That's right. And one thing, other thing too, yeah, other thing too, we got to make sure that we are incorporating some of the same behaviors that the other schools are doing, because our children need to be able to when they graduate, be able to have an opportunity to walk into a career. They shouldn't have to sit for 6-12 months to find a job. So we got to incorporate internships and those kind of things. You know, we got to change some behaviors in order to ensure that diploma will result in an opportunity job, because we know what the challenges are here in this corporate, in this world that we all live in. But we got to make sure that, because that's the message thing. You know, I graduated and I right away I was able to walk into a position or a job. How did you do that? Well, I went into had an internship or my this, that, and the other. So we really, that's one of the measures we got to take to really, because, you know, you don't, when you graduate, most cases kids are walking, their families are walking out of there with student loans and things of that nature. So you really would love to be able to kind of grab it, move right into a job opportunity, you know, career opportunity.
Absolutely. And on that note, brothers, we're gonna have to cut it. Tim, thank you for calling in tonight, man. God bless you, man.
Yes,
call
sir.
In anytime, man.
Yes.
You know, you're right down the street, man. Call in anytime.
Yes.
Brothers, always
thank
happy
you
to
so
have
much.
You, man. Get your perspective. Ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna have to invite Mr. Joe Bachman on later show, another show. We're praying for him. Hope everything is okay with him. He didn't make it in tonight, but he has some great information. He has a beautiful program, carrying young kids all around the world to visit HBCUs, and they end up going because they can't take it, man. It's a beautiful sight. Once you step on the campus of an HBCU, it's hard to say no. God bless you, everybody. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We're out of here. We'll see you next Wednesday. God bless you. Good night, everybody.
Take care.
Leon, I'm about to get out of here, bro.
Yes, me too, brother. Bless you, man. We enjoyed the conversation, man.
Good show, man.
Have yourself a good night. Be safe.
Huh?
Thank you. All right, brother.
Later.
Yes, sir.